documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, AM and FM stations, terrestrial stations all across the country, streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan COG Region 9. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here for the next 3 hours. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. Today is the 2nd of July, 2016, and it's good to have you with us once again, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be another one of those fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants radio shows today. I'll tell you what, I went out of town on Thursday because my daughter is in Illinois, or was in Illinois, on an archaeological dig, and that's why I've been going out of town a lot. She's been gone for, well, a good 6 weeks, and we went down there once to visit her, and we had to go back and get her, and so glad she's home. However, on the way, now, many of you have heard me talk about my my daughter Hannah and her struggles with epilepsy. Both my daughters were, at one time, members of the United States Figure Skating Association, and as part of that, they did, you know, they did competitions and that sort of thing, and the thought was is to try to give them a skill that they love to do so that they could have the ability to, you know, if people fall upon tough times, as we know, undoubtedly there are tough times coming in this country, our country. There are tough times ahead. That's been orchestrated. There's no doubt in my mind that we're in the middle of a depression right now. There's no doubt in my mind, ladies and gentlemen, that we're headed for some very, very difficult economic calamities. I don't think it's avoidable, honestly. I think it's been engineered for us. I think the plans have been in place for many, many years. And the fact that it's still going on today, the fact that we haven't seen the worst of it yet. In other words, what I mean by that is that the illusion that the economy is still good, can still even exist amongst some of our fellow countrymen and women, just speaks to the overall ability of the banking establishment to manipulate things. If you'd have told me back in, the early 2000s, that we would still be here in 2016 without having had a great economic collapse, I would have said you're crazy. There's no way it could keep going that long. And yet here we are, 2016. Now, we can look back and see that there has been a steady gradual decline, a steady gradual, what would you call it? Instead of a sudden collapse, there's been a steady, gradual, slow boil, you know, frog in a boiling pot type of scenario where the economy has continued to decline, slide, and people have continued to get unemployed. People have continued to get hungry and homeless. And certainly the 2008 crash, the hot pop of the housing bubble, which was entirely created, played into that in a big way. So there's been a steady slide, and we see that. And that's not something that's... But the average person has been able to maintain this idea, this notion. You know, it's been said that if a recession is when your neighbor loses his job, a depression is when you lose yours. Most people in our country have known someone, maybe themselves, maybe somebody else, maybe a relative, maybe a friend, but a neighbor, somebody who's lost a job. And the time that it takes to get one, to replace what you've lost, gets higher and higher. Now, there are pockets of economic boom. There always are, winners and losers and everything. The bottom line is that there's no question that we have some tough times ahead. And I don't think that that's avoidable. But getting back to what I was talking about a moment ago, having a skill, and any skill that you can fall back on is very important. And so I tried to, my wife and I tried to give my daughters something that they loved that provides them the ability to raise money for themselves to, you know, as long as there's a market for that sort of thing. And training young children to figure skate, there seems to be, and of course, you know, if some people get desperate enough, there's not going to be maybe a demand for that. But that's another thing that maybe people might be willing to pay for. Because people like to, you might have more affluent people who want to take their put their children through that and compete, and maybe even try at the Olympics. Anyway, the point is that this is something that they could do to maybe coach people and raise money and maybe even pay their way through college. So that was the thinking behind that, in my view. And so the both of them were figure skating association members, and they coached small children. My youngest daughter had hit her head on the ice. One of the students, he didn't mean to do it, but he accidentally tripped her. She went down. When she got back up, she hit a hole in the ice. And this time when she went down, she hit her head on the ice. Well, it was a short time after that that she developed epilepsy. And I always put the two things together because she had never had a problem before that. Long story short, we've been experimenting with different concoctions of things, exploring all kinds of options to try to help her. And it's been a continuing struggle. Anyway, I went down to get her on Thursday with my father-in-law and my other daughter. And we went down there and to spend the night, because first thing in the morning on Friday, we had to go and be there and get her, and we had a deadline to get her out. As soon as we got there, she had no more gotten in the van. Now, bear in mind, she'd been there for 6 weeks and never had a problem. As soon as she got in the van, then she immediately had a seizure. So, and she, to make matters even worse, she came out of the seizure and she had dislocated her shoulder. And this would be like the third or fourth time that this had happened. And so we drove the next 6 hours. Well, actually, it was longer than that because we had all kinds of traffic jams in the meantime. So, I mean, there was a lot of people on the roads. That's one thing that was nice about the low gas prices. People got out and they were able to do their driving like they wanted to do. And so that's a good thing. But it did add time to our travel because there's construction zones and everything was backed up, you know, for miles. Sometimes 47-minute delays and that sort of thing. And there was accident after accident and people don't, you know, the problem with people, and I'm getting off on a rampage and I don't want to ramble here because we got a lot to talk about. Problem with people, ladies and gentlemen, when you're on the highway, just do me a favor. Don't tailgate. Because I'll tell you what, everybody follows, it seems like everybody on the highway follows way too close. And this is the number one reason why there's so many accidents on the roadway. So as a public service announcement to everyone out there, please spread the message. Don't follow closely. Allow yourself at least one car length per every 10 miles an hour that you're doing, okay? Give yourself enough, and that's the bare minimum. Give yourself plenty of room between you and the car ahead. And this is driver's training 101, but it's one of my pet peeves. This is what causes so many problems on the roadways. People tailgate. Every time you turn around, people just follow way too close. And you'll save your life, maybe the life of somebody else, but you certainly save yourself a lot of frustration because maybe, just maybe, you won't end up hitting that car in front of you. But anyway, we had a lot of problems with that and backed up. And as soon as we got home, we get to go to the ER, my wife and I, and have them put her arm back in its socket. So So I've been up quite a bit the last couple of days, probably between yesterday, the day before, the night before last and tonight. I probably have gotten 8 or 9 hours sleep, which isn't too bad. Could be worse, but doing show prep has turned into a nightmare. So luckily, earlier in the week, I was able to put some things together. Because I anticipated having a time crunch. I didn't anticipate what we had to go through. More updates, more information coming out all the time on this shooter situation. Hold on just a second. I have to turn my volume up a little bit. I can barely hear myself in the headphones. All right, getting into the show. By the way, if you'd like to call in, certainly welcome to call in. 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-646-8376. You know, this Orlando shooting thing continues to be a puzzle. Now, earlier in the week, we had a lockdown of Andrews Air Force Base, another active shooter situation. There, USA Today reported a security team's forces conducting a routine inspection. Now, see, that wasn't an active shooter situation. That was a drill. That's what I wanted to talk about regarding this, because why do we have to have all these drills all the time? You know, I remember it wasn't that many years ago. We never had drills everywhere you go all across America, ladies and gentlemen. It never occurred. It wasn't necessary. About the time that the drills started, then you started having all of the active shooter situations happen at the same time. And no, it's not a cause and effect. I can hear a naysayer say, oh, well, the reason why they're having the drills is because the active shooter situations took place at the same time. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. Now, we've always had some shooter situations take place. But I remember the very point where we started to see a blurring of fact and fiction, where drills are being had started being engineered, and the parties involved weren't even aware that there were a drill. There was a case on a school bus where the students on the school bus were terrified because a drill was taking place on the bus with an active shooter, and they didn't even tell the students until they got to the school that it was a drill. There was another case at a school. The students weren't there at this point, at that time, in that case, but the faculty was having a meeting, and they had a guy come in to the faculty meeting, and this guy was an undercover police officer or something, and he was portraying himself to be an active shooter. And I remember talking to Nancy about this on the air. I said, what's going on here? Are we starting to see? And they, you know, nobody on the board, none of the faculty knew. Nobody knew it was a drill. And I remember talking to her about this and said, why are they doing this? It looks like we're seeing an emergence of fact, a blurring of the lines between fact and fiction. And that was long before Sandy Hook. That was long before we started seeing this stuff take place everywhere. And now you can't tell, in many cases, without studying a situation for hours. It's very hard to know whether what you're seeing is real and what you're seeing is a manufactured reality, an artificial reality, a psychological operation. So this drill took place on Andrews Air Force Base. Security forces team conducting a routine inspection at Andrews Air Force Base was mistaken for an active shooter Thursday, prompting a lockdown of the facility just as a scheduled training exercise to deal with such an emergency was about to begin. Wow, what a coincidence, huh? The report prompted officials. Now, what if somebody had taken and shot somebody in real, ladies and gentlemen? Let's see. This is an Air Force base. Military, in other words. Doesn't the military have a lot of weaponry hanging around? You'd think they would. Wouldn't it be interesting to? I mean, what if somebody had taken somebody out over this because of the confusion? Does it make any sense to be doing this? I don't think so. And that's the case with all of this stuff. When you have a drill going on, and you have an active shooter situation, maybe you don't tell people that there's a drill going on. What if somebody stands up, and I could see this happening more and more, that somebody who's playing a role in a rehearsal, in a drill, being shot because the people involved, who the would-be victims, but they don't know any better, shoot the guy. They take the guy out. Or lady, but usually it's a guy for some reason. I mean, what we're dealing with here, ladies and gentlemen, is absolute insanity. It's absolute insanity. Now, that I want to put that to bed there. There's other people that have uncovered. In fact, there's a FM station in New York, New York, called Superstation 95. And their newsroom put out an article, "How did the Orlando victim, Antonio Devon Brown, die in a Pulse nightclub shooting when he was killed in 2013 in West Virginia?" They put this out, got his picture there. They say, according to media reports, Antonio Devon Brown was one of the 49 people killed in Orlando on June 12th. Except WOWK TV News says Antonio Devon Brown died in a shootout in 2013 in West Virginia. Strange, they say. Two guys with the same name, approximately the same name, same age, both being killed in shooting crimes years apart. Gee, what are the odds? This is a mainstream radio station, I guess. Are they a bunch of conspiracy nuts? Are they a bunch of wackos, ladies and gentlemen? They provide a link to the Tallahassee.com. They say, here are the links to the recent Orlando gay nightclub shooting report, reporting the victim as Antonio Devon Brown, age 30. And then they have the actual report there from the TV station, it looks like. Screenshots. And links to the West Virginia news outlet showing Antonio Devon Brown. He was killed. Now, you know, the average person would just blow this off and say, well, you know, they just got the name wrong. Or, well, they just got the picture wrong. Or, it's just a screw up. They just made a mistake. But see, there's so many things about this incident that are just quote unquote mistakes. There are so many questions about this incident that just don't add up. And 9/11 research started off like this. You know, back in 9/11, which was an awakening for many people in this movement, it was really September 11, 2001, the events surrounding that, that woke up a lot of people. And I mean, a lot of liberals joined the patriot ranks. They had liberal backgrounds because of 9/11. And I remember watching that whole thing unfold. Now, I think there were a lot of people on the other side trying to bring that into the dialectic. Because when we were doing research on 9/11, most people weren't talking about it. Very few people were aware. Most people were drinking the Kool-Aid. But as time progressed, there became this burgeoning 9/11 truth movement. Some of which I think was grown out of the other side to a certain extent. As the thing started taking off, they had to do something to try to put it back into the box. So they co-opted it, in my opinion, and brought a whole lot of people out of the woodwork, some of whom made some pretty insane claims, in my opinion, so that the whole thing could just be poo-pooed as some partisan thing. Or, oh, you're just all a bunch of crazy nutcases and, you know, move along. There's nothing to see here. But that's how the whole thing with September 11th started out. Just little oddities that turned into big oddities that turn to into an overwhelming case. You can convict somebody of murder in a court of law, assuming that you had a legitimate court of law, first of all, which is an awful big assumption today. But you can get a conviction based upon guilt beyond any reasonable doubt. So we have much more than a, quote, reasonable doubt here. When you have an overwhelming case, you can get a conviction on circumstantial evidence. Of course, in this case of September 11th, we have a lot more than circumstantial. We have smoking gun documents, and that's why I focus on the documents regarding September 11th. They planned the war in advance and needed a triggering event. They say that in their documents. So how much more do you really need, is my point. But ladies and gentlemen, this Orlando thing is unfolding very much the same way that September 11th research did. Oddity after oddity after oddity. Strange things, timelines that don't add up. And here you have another case where apparently victims being recycled. There's other cases we've talked about last week with people and actors. And I won't rehash last week's show, but if you didn't listen to it, you need to go back and listen to it if you're a doubter. At the very least, do your own research. And if you come away without any questions, well, I guess good for you, or maybe not so much. But at least do it due diligence. Because you know what? And why is it important? Well, it's only your gun rights, ladies and gentlemen. It's only your Second Amendment. It's only your ability to stand firm and stand your ground. And we're not even necessarily just talking about stopping government tyranny here. We're talking about stopping somebody from breaking in the house and raping your wife and children. A lot of people who used to be anti-Second Amendment, I don't like those guns. Oh, I'm scared of those guns. Those guns might shoot somebody. Well, yeah, that's what they're designed to do. But the point of the matter is, when you're in a situation, let's say you drive through the wrong neighborhood, and you got some gangbangers headed your way because you're stopped at a traffic light, and you're in blocked traffic, and they decide, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to have a little fun here. And they start approaching your car. At that moment, all of your rhetoric goes out the window. At that moment, you'd give anything for a firearm. At that moment, you'd give anything for anything that's going to save your life and get you out of that situation alive. This is what the people in Washington, D.C. want to take away from you. This is what these mayors that are getting together in these little meetings all across the country, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which shouldn't even exist. This is what they are doing. These people are control freaks and they're extremely evil. And they would like nothing better because they're tyrants. This is what tyrants do. So, we have a situation here where the FBI apparently has been telling the Florida cops to not respond or to deny public records when they're requested via FOIA, you know, the Freedom of Information Act. Claire Bernish of the Free Thought Project cites the Orlando Sentinel a letter, she says, revealed by the Orlando Sentinel, shows the FBI requested law enforcement agencies who responded to and investigated the massacre at Orlando's Pulse nightclub to withhold information from the public. A letter from the FBI dated June 20th, attached to a lawsuit brought by the city of Orlando seeking the release of 911 calls in full, as well as other records pertaining to the shooting, had also been forwarded to the Seminole County Sheriff's Office, but included instructions for law enforcement to deny all requests for information. Now, why would that be, ladies and gentlemen? Once again, we come back to September 11th, 2001, where the feds took all the tapes, any surveillance tapes around the Pentagon, businesses, anyway, they made their rounds and confiscated everything as a part of a, quote, ongoing FBI investigation, or Homeland Security, whatever the alphabet soup agency was. And they took everything. And the only video, that, to my knowledge, that has ever been released has been a few frames, and that raised a whole lot more questions than answers. Because what it appeared was actually going through into the Pentagon appeared to be a missile. There was no plane wreckage anywhere. And the hole didn't match, wasn't consistent with what, I mean, we could get into that. And I don't want to get into that. We've talked that thing to death in the past. The point is that what is going on with this Orlando shooting incident? Why the cover-up? Why the deny of FOIA requests? Under the guise of protecting the investigation, she says, as well as the victims and their families, the letter asks law enforcement agencies to deny information to anyone asking immediately notify the FBI of any requests your agency received so the FBI can seek to prevent disclosure through appropriate channels as necessary. Under an official FBI seal, the letter signed by a special agent in charge of the agency's, I'll tell you what, let's continue this on the other side of the break. We've got to take the bottom of the hour break already. This half hour just kind of flew by. I'll try to kick it into high gear when we come back. We'll be back in a moment, folks. Please stay with us. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. The website, www.governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. My email address, radio@governamerica.com. That's radio@governamerica.com. And you can get to the chat room at chat.governamerica.com. That's chat.governamerica.com. So lots of directions for you. And before the break, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we've been talking about a little bit revisiting this Orlando shooting incident because it just keeps on unfolding. And I would like to put it to bed, but the problem is, as long as they're still clamoring for gun, and I understand the GOP now on Capitol Hill beginning to cave on gun legislation, ladies and gentlemen. Your trusted Republicans, that's right, the people that you thought were on your side, getting ready to cave and give in to gun control. Oh boy. You know, here we have another situation where Republicans should be standing strong, should be standing for your rights, should be standing for the Constitution. What are they doing? They're negotiating an agreement, a deal. They're supposed to be, now originally they voted down four bills, at least, that were put forward. The votes weren't there. And, you know, the other side, you know, some people would counter me by saying, oh, well, you know, hey, if the Democrats had been there, those gun control bills would all have passed. Well, maybe so. But this shouldn't even be an issue with a Republican-controlled Congress. But here we are. It looks like they're going to be giving in. Looks like it could very well be they could end up having a bill where people who are on a terrorist watch list could be prohibited from buying a gun. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what does it take to get on a terrorist watch list? Maybe, you know, how do we know? And do we know who's on one and who isn't? You know, I remember when we were talking about the surveillance thing out there, or the situation out there in Orlando with the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge standoff, yours truly was under FBI surveillance. We were under federal surveillance. Probably still are. I don't know. But they were very obvious. It was very obvious. They were surveilling us. They didn't exactly try to cover it up. They were right there on the stream 24/7. And, in fact, they hacked our Shoutcast DNAS server to reserve their IP address, which traced straight to the White House. I did a reverse whoas lookup on the IP address, and it's traced right to the White House. They hacked into our Shoutcast DNAS server, brute forced in their way in to reserve themselves a slot so that they wouldn't get bumped off if we got too many people on the stream. Okay, so they didn't exactly try to cover this up. Now, all we were doing was talking about what was going on out there. All we were doing was discussing the situation and trying to get out the truth as best we knew it. Now, am I on a terrorist watch list? Because I've been broadcasting for years trying to get the truth out, trying to preserve the rights that we've had in this country since 1776. We've got a steady, gradual encroachment upon our rights. All I want to do is be left alone. I have never once on this broadcast advocated the taking up of arms against the government. Not one time. As a matter of fact, there have been people who have called in over the years. Perhaps they're agents provocateur. Perhaps they're just misguided individuals. But there have been people who have called in and said, when are we going to do this? When are we going to just take up arms? And I've always shot them down. No pun intended here. I've always told them, no. This is not the strategy we want to employ. And in fact, the other side would love to be able to take advantage of an armed conflict against them, because then they could turn around and use it against us. Folks, they got bigger guns than we do, even with the guns we have. Now, it does provide us protection against a roundup, I think. Maybe I'm naive in that regard, but as I said last week, I think, whenever the government comes knocking to take away people's guns or take you away, they bring overwhelming force. It would be much more difficult for them to do that to everybody in the country. Now, that doesn't mean they can't. What I really think they're going to do is they're going to try to use your local police and sheriff and departments against you to whatever degree they could for the roundup. That's a better way of doing it anyway, isn't it? Because they don't have to get their hands dirty. They can let the local guys or the state guys deal with the dirty roundup of people who don't turn in their firearms when and if they're banned. And that's the kind of stuff we're already seeing go on in cities, various places, that are putting more and more stringent gun control in place. They're going to target the big cities right away. If they can pass ordinances against firearms, the battle will be fought in the courts. And as we've already seen, with the untimely departure, and I think the suspicious departure, of Antonin Scalia, we're going to start seeing a more liberal and pro-gun control Supreme Court. So when these things end up ultimately, their ultimate destination, the Supreme Court, what way are they going to go? Because most of what we have seen preserved has been a 5-4 decision. And we're not going to have any more 5-4 decisions in favor of your rights. Something to ponder. So, anyway, before the break, we were talking about this FBI cover-up. How they're refusing to release information for people who are requesting, using Freedom of Information Act requests. Finishing up with this Claire Bernish article. She says, under the guise of protecting the investigation, as well as the victims and their families, the letter ask law enforcement agencies to deny information to anyone asking, and immediately notify the FBI of any requests your agency receives so the FBI can seek to prevent disclosure through appropriate channels as necessary. Under an official FBI seal, the letter signed by Special Agent in Charge of the agency's Tampa field office, Paul Weissapol, who refused to comment to the Sentinel, states in part, quote, "As you know, there is an active ongoing investigation being conducted by the FBI. The FBI considers information obtained from state and local law enforcement agencies in furtherance of its investigation to the evidence or potential evidence. Accordingly, the FBI is concerned that public disclosure of such records or information at this time will adversely affect our ability to effectively investigate the shooting and bring the matter to resolution." Now, why would that be, ladies and gentlemen? How would the 911 tapes, how would it interfere with their investigation? I can't really envision a scenario where it would. They say it could endanger the safety of law enforcement officers. Oh, really? How could that happen? And other individuals who have participated in or are otherwise connected with the investigation and risks unduly prejudicing any prosecutions that may result from the investigation, unquote. That was the end of that. Now, this article continues. Though the letter claims the 911 audio recordings and any other information pertaining to the mass shooting would have an exemption under the Freedom of Information Act's Section 522B7A, protecting records or information compiled for law enforcement purposes where disclosure would adversely affect a pending investigation, the excuse seems flimsy and superficial. According to the Sentinel, attorneys for media outlets involved argue in the lawsuit for the release of all pertinent records because there exists a strong public interest in fully evaluating how first responders and police reacted during the most critical phases of this incredible tragedy. And that's assuming there was a tragedy at all. It's assuming, ladies and gentlemen, that somebody was really shot. And maybe there was people shot. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. I don't know. I wasn't there. You have to question everything. Because when I start seeing crisis actors, when I start seeing people with acting resumes online that are involved in this, that are big spokespeople for this, makes me wonder. But it is entirely possible that we had crisis actors and some people shot too. Which brings us to another point. Who did the shooting? If there was shooting and done. We'll get to that in a moment. There's other stuff that we have here. There's a follow-up on the Paris. We find out this week, just a few days ago, regarding the Paris attacks. That was another incident. That the gun used in a Paris attack, one of the guns used, actually was a Fast and Furious weapon. Ladies and gentlemen, you remember the Fast and Furious program we were talking about for months and months? I don't know, maybe even years? Where Eric Holder, the scumbag Justice Department piece of manure, was arming drug cartels, allowing the guns to walk, ladies and gentlemen. In other words, walk across the border so the Mexican president, Vicente Fox, can turn around and blame our Second Amendment for fueling the drug cartels. Eric Holder did that. And Brian Terry, Border Patrol agent, was shot down, and this is where the whole thing began to hit the fan. Because then Border Patrol agent was killed. But how many other people were killed that never got mentioned? Many. And they were... Anyway, now we find out that all the way over in Paris, one of the Fast and Furious weapons, which was traced to Arizona. Phoenix, to be exact. It was all back, goes back to the Obama administration. The very people who want to take away your guns. Judicial Watch uncovered this. One of the guns used in the November 13th, and there's the 13th again, ladies and gentlemen. The November 13th, 2015 Paris attacks came from Phoenix, Arizona, where the Obama administration allowed criminals to buy thousands of weapons illegally in a deadly and futile gun-walking operation known as Fast and Furious. A report of investigation, or ROI, filed by a case in the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives tracked the gun used in the Paris attacks to a Phoenix gun owner who sold it legally off-book. A Judicial Watch's law enforcement sources confirm. Federal agencies, federal agents tracing the firearm also found that the Phoenix gun owner was in possession, to be in possession, of an unregistered, fully automatic weapon, according to law enforcement officials with first-hand knowledge of the investigation. The investigative follow-up of the Paris weapon consisted of tracking a paper trail using a 4473 form, which documents a gun ownership history by, among other things, using serial numbers. The Phoenix gun owner that the weapon was traced back to was found to have at least two federal firearms violations for selling one weapon illegally and possessing an unregistered automatic, but no enforcement or prosecutorial action was taken against the individual. Instead, ATF leaders went out of their way to keep the information under the radar and ensure that the gun owner's identity was kept quiet, according to law enforcement officials, sources involved with the case. Agents were told, in the process of taking the fully auto, not to anger the seller to prevent him from going public, a veteran law enforcement official told Judicial Watch. They say it's not clear if the agency which is responsible for cracking down on the illegal use and trafficking of firearms did this because the individual was involved in the Fast and Furious gunning scheme. The ATF spokesperson, Corey Ray, at the agency's Washington, D.C. headquarters, told Judicial Watch that no firearms used in the Paris attacks had been traced by the agency. When asked about the ROA or ROI report linking the weapon used in Paris to Phoenix, Ray said, "I'm not familiar with the report you're referencing." Judicial Watch also tried contacting the Phoenix ATF office, but multiple calls were not answered. Anyway, there's another paragraph to that. That article will be in the show notes. The point is, ladies and gentlemen, we're seeing terrorism set up by the FBI, a gun running operation set up by the Justice Department, the federal government arming itself to the teeth while they're trying everything they can to take away your guns, your rights to defend yourself. And we have operations going on where the federal government is talking about food. FEMA is planning, and the security industrial complex is planning for shortages of food and civil unrest. We have UN vehicles being spotted in Virginia and Texas, apparently, now. In America. Some people say, well, they were manufactured in Virginia to be used elsewhere. Well, maybe. Why are they being spotted in Texas as well? Are they getting ready for something, listeners? This harkens back to my earlier comments earlier in the show. The fiat monetary system cannot continue the way it is. We know this. Anyway, now a new revelation came out here just this week as well. As far as I know, it wasn't a revelation that had been well, as far as I know, it hadn't been previously revealed. But Andrew Napolitano, and I want to thank Melody, if she's listening, for sending this to me, because I was not aware of this. Andrew Napolitano, the judge who used to have his own show on Fox News Channel, he was a guest, and he did talk about this whole case. And what's interesting about this is that the feds put out a timeline, and the timeline never has made sense. Now, we talked about how they disappeared the 911 recordings. They seized that, apparently. Now, you know, Broadcastify said that they had a server error. Well, did they, or did the FBI come in and say, you know what, we want you to destroy that, or we want you to turn that over to us and delete it, the one, the copies online? Why is this got to be so secret? That's my point. But we have Napolitano on Fox News talking about this transcript. And he reveals some pretty interesting information. I want to play you the audio. Listen carefully to what Judge Andrew Napolitano said.
How many omissions were there? Were there one? Well, then it could explain that one-off scenario that they originally talked about.
It's impossible to tell.
This was not a one-off.
Right. These are in two parts. There's an actual transcript, and then there's a summary of the rest. Here's what's news in the summary. Mm-hmm. Nobody died until 5:13 in the morning when the SWAT team entered. Mm. Prior to that, no one had been killed. The 53 that were injured and the 49 that were murdered all met their fates at the time of and during the police entry into the building.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm open to the truth on this broadcast. I'm not going to tell you nobody died. I'm not going to tell you somebody did die. I don't know what happened. All I know, all I have, is questions. And I can tell you from studying this thing, the hours that I have, something stinks to high heaven here. It could be that we have multiple things going on here. But something is really, really wrong here. Because if people died, if people were gunned down, what Judge Napolitano just said is that nobody was gunned down. Well, let's play that part again.
How many omissions?
And there's a summary of the rest. Here's what's news in the summary. Mm-hmm. Nobody died until 5:13 in the morning.
Okay, nobody died until 5:13 in the morning after the SWAT team arrived. After the SWAT team arrived. Well, if that's true, and this is your establishment media putting this information out, right? Fox News, apparently citing an official report, an official transcript, then how would that jive with the official narrative? My question is this, ladies and gentlemen, is this government democide? Did the government come in and murder people at this nightclub so that they could blame it on this Omar Mateen and then take away your guns? Early in the report, we heard the local media talking about how there were other shooters. Now, setting aside the crisis actor thing for just a moment, because we know some of these people that were involved were actors, and we know there were very unexplained and very weird things happening with people being carried the wrong direction, you know, supposedly injured and being carried toward the club. I'm wondering if there wasn't a drill going on in conjunction with a real shooting. I don't know. I'm just sitting here trying to figure this out and make sense of this. But there's a real problem here with the timeline. If there was nobody shot prior, there were nobody shot before, prior to the arrival of the SWAT team, that suggests to me that it was the SWAT team themselves that did the shooting. And in fact, they have actually admitted. I thought I had the article here somewhere, but in the Daily Mail. Well, let me just call it up here, because in the Daily Mail, they actually, there was a police chief, the police chief there, actually admitted that they may have shot some of the victims. Here it is. The Daily Mail out of the UK. And I believe I already have this in last week's show notes. I'll put it again in this week. Did a delay in the response give the gunman more time? Cops face questions over why it took 3 hours for SWAT team to storm Orlando nightclub as police chief admits officers may have shot some of the victims. Police Chief John Mina and officers are facing scrutiny for the response. Took 3 hours for tactical units to enter after Omar Mateen opened fire. Delay has raised questions that the gunman was given more time to shoot. Orlando cops have already admitted they've learned from the attack. SWAT set off explosives outside Pulse nightclub to blow holes in the wall, but the devices didn't penetrate, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, they're talking about how they admitted to shooting the victims. My question is, was there an active shooting taking place before the cops arrived? According to Judge Napolitano, apparently not. This raises a lot of questions, listeners. Because if the government is going into places now and shooting up places, sending people in to kill people, to murder people, to gun people down, to take away your firearms, turn around and blame a patsy, finger somebody else for the crimes, for what amounts to democide. We've got a real problem in this nation, even as our military is being dispatched around the world, supposedly for humanitarian purposes, supposedly to stop governments from terrorizing their own people. I mean, what are we doing in Syria right now? If we're to believe the official narrative, isn't it to stop that evil Assad from terrorizing his own people? Why did we go into Iraq? Oh, Saddam Hussein, weapons of mass destruction. He's gassing the Kurds. And yet, nobody died in this incident. And we know the government's had a history of this sort of thing anyway. We know they've done a lot of things to different races over the years in our nation, in our country. Folks, we have crossed a threshold into a whole new arena. And it's not looking very pretty. Now, there was another shooting that took place, and this was apparently a real incident at a South Carolina nightclub. Now, you probably didn't hear much about this one. When we come back from the top of the hour break, maybe we'll get into why you probably didn't hear too much about this one. Stay with us. This is Governed America. I'm Darren Weeks. Phone call if you'd like to call in. Phone number is 1-844-646-8376. By the way, in the final hour today, we're going to be visiting with Linda Kurtz. And we're going to be talking about smart meters. She has an education network. We'll discuss that with her in the final hour of today's show. 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. We'll be back in a moment.
Govern America.
We're just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, AM and FM stations all across the country, and live and archived on the World Wide Web, broadcasting live from FEMA Region 5, Michigan COG Region 9. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here for the next 2 hours now. Second hour of Govern America as it continues to be the 2nd of July, 2016, and Independence Day right around the corner, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you feel free? Don't you feel independent? Don't you feel so vibrant? Hey, we declared war against Britain. We got ourselves free, didn't we? Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Then why is Obama talking about how interdependent? Why do we have him, the scumbag that he is, cooperating with Mexico and the Canadian leader to establish, reemerge the North American Union again? all over again, ladies and gentlemen. The same battle that we, you know, I remember the report of the Independent Council on Independent Task Force on the future of North America. You remember us dealing with that back in right around 2005? Yeah, baby, it's all back again. They're doing it all over again. By the way, greetings to all the folks in the chat room, chat.governamerica.com. Greetings to folks listening to us via satellite and the streams on American Voice Radio Network. Greetings to all the folks at UCY.TV. Glad to have you along as well. And all the folks listening to us on microstations all across the country. Thank you to all the microstations for doing the job of educating people on the ground. And thank you to everybody else involved in carrying the show. Please spread the word about the broadcast. So that we can increase our numbers, tell people, and you know, I don't necessarily want you to just increase our numbers with people who are aware. Increase our numbers with people who don't know the information, people who are not a part of the Patriot effort. Those are the ones we really need to reach. Spread it around, ladies and gentlemen. Give them the website, tell them to listen, and you know, introduce them to different broadcasts that you think are important. Because this is really where the rubber meets the road. Better late than never. Then that's the way I got to, you know, if we don't do it, if we don't increase our numbers, we're going to lose. And this is one thing about the shooting thing, and I've been talking about this for the past hour. I just can't seem to get away from it because there's so many strange things. For those of you who are just joining us, we were talking about in the last hour, played audio from Andrew Napolitano, who said nobody died until 5:13 or whatever in the morning at the Orlando incident. Nobody died, according to this transcript that was released. Well, let me just play you the audio one more time.
There's an actual transcript, and then there's a summary of the rest. Here's what's news in the summary. Mm-hmm. Nobody died until 5:13 in the morning when the SWAT team entered. Mm. Prior to that, no one had been killed. The 53 that were injured and the 49 that were murdered all met their fates at the time of and during the police entry into the building.
Okay, so we talked last week about you know, the crisis actors involved, and my point is that maybe somebody was shot there, maybe somebody wasn't shot there. It's looking to me like there was an active drill going on or some kind of deal involving crisis actors and that sort of thing, but there could very well have been people shot too. There could have been a real event, but who shot whom? And according to this transcript, you know, which completely goes against the government narrative, nobody was shot until 5:13 in the morning, which makes me wonder, was everybody shot by the police? We've got the Daily Mail reporting about the police chief and how they were admitting, that they may have shot some of the victims. So my question is, did they shoot all the victims? You know, we're supposed to believe, oh, well, you know, bullets ricochet. Which bullets do? But that's an awful lot of ricocheting, my friend. Did the government murder these people? If people really died, did the government murder them to enact gun control? And blame a patsy for it? Because there were a number of people in the media that were saying there were other shooters. Perhaps not all of these people were lying. Maybe they did see other shooters. I don't know. I'm asking questions, folks. But there's something really weird on this story. Really weird. Anyway, I told you at the end of the last hour that we have a situation at another nightclub where there was a shooter that took place. And the media just completely ignored this for the most part. Jay Sermopoulos of the Free Thought Project, he took notice. It's a remarkable incident in Lyman, South Carolina, is being largely ignored by corporate mainstream media as if it doesn't, because it doesn't fit their guns are bad narrative. A man with a concealed carry license stopped a mass shooting in progress, ladies and gentlemen, outside a South Carolina nightclub in the early hours of Sunday after an assailant opened fire in a crowd of people, striking and injuring three people. Jody Ray Thompson, 32, faces multiple attempted murder charges stemming from the incident, according to the Spartanburg County deputies. None of the victims injured. Injuries were life-threatening, according to police. But they would have been. His rounds struck the shooter. His round struck three victims and almost struck a fourth victim who, in self-defense, pulled his own weapon, ladies and gentlemen, striking Thompson in the leg, Lieutenant Kevin Bubble said. Police said that after getting into an altercation with another man, Thompson pulled out a firearm and began firing into a crowd of people that had gathered near the front of the club around 3:30 a.m., according to WIST television. As Thompson was firing at the crowd of people, one of the would-be victims with a concealed carry permit was able to return fire, striking Thompson in the leg and ending the mass shooting in progress. Thompson was still on the scene when deputies arrived, but the initial scene was chaotic, Lieutenant Bobo said. It wasn't until victims and witnesses were interviewed and video from the scene was reviewed that Thompson was identified as the suspect. Police confirmed that the man who stopped the attack had a valid concealed weapons permit and won't face any charges. Thompson faces four counts of attempted murder, possession of a weapon during the commission of a violent crime, and unlawful carrying of a weapon. The interesting thing about the incident is that it flies in the face of the narrative that people would be safer if we make it harder for individuals to gain access to or legally carry firearms. There is a certain level of common sense regulation, such as not allowing violent felons or convicted. See, now, I don't agree with that either. This person writing this says there's a certain amount of common sense regulation, such as not allowing violent felons or convicted terrorists to own guns. Excuse me, you don't allow inmates to carry guns, okay? If somebody's a violent felon, you lock them up. You keep them locked up until they're not a violent felon. When they get out, guess what? They get their guns back. Oh, we can't do that. They committed a felony. I'm sorry. We can't have a two-class system here in America, ladies and gentlemen. This is the problem. This is how they're getting the job done. You got to change your thinking. This whole notion that we deny felons. You know, once a felon, you're always a felon. If you do your time, you get out. Guess what? You're still a felon. You got to wear this scarlet letter on your head for the rest of your life. No. If a person is a risk to society, you lock them up until they're not a risk to society. But if they're free, if they're not a risk enough, if they're non-threatening enough to let them go free, they get their constitutional rights. Because a right is not a privilege. If it is a privilege, if it can be taken away, it amounts to a privilege. A right is a right, and it is God-given. Well, they might commit a crime again. Yes, and so might anybody else. This is an excuse to take away people's rights to everything. If they're a threat, lock them up. And this notion of convicted terrorists, we can't allow convicted terrorists. Well, who's a terrorist? How do you define a terrorist? You might say that anybody that commits a violent crime is a terrorist. And the government certainly has labeled half the country a terrorist. If you look at their definitions, most people would fall into some category. Oh, but we can't allow those mentally ill, crazy people. Hey, we can't let them have guns either, can we? Well, you know, crazy people. And who's crazy? Well, gee, I think Weeks is crazy. You know, I've been called crazy many times on the internet. YouTube recently. A lot of people called me crazy, among many other things. So, should I not be allowed to buy a gun? You see, this is the problem. You label people with crazy, label people with, you know, following the definition of Diagnostic and Statistical Manual on Mental Health, which labeled homosexuality and so-called transgender, which I say there's nothing, no such thing as a transgendered person. You're born male or female unless you're born with a deformity. Every cell in your body defines whether you're a woman or a man. So there is no transgender. The blurring is it is a mental illness and was once defined as a mental illness in the DSM. Point is, hey, none of those people would be allowed to buy. As you start dividing people into groups and you start denying groups certain God-given rights, ladies and gentlemen, eventually everybody will fit into a group and nobody will have any rights. This is the strategy. A long time ago, I said in this country, our country, I got to get out of the habit of saying this country. We need to change the dialogue, folks, and say our country. This is our country. And I'm trying to break myself of the habit of saying this country. It's our country. Own it. Own it. It's yours. It's high time that we, who believe in the foundation of our nation, take it back and work to preserve what we have, because we're losing it, folks. We're losing it all. Anyway, it's very hypocritical of the media to never report on this South Carolina nightclub incident. And that right there tells you what this thing is all about. All right, in the interest of time, I want to move on here. Earlier, I was talking about how the Republicans are in the process of compromising on your gun control. New York Times has a thing, a gun control wall, bolstered by Republicans, shows a crack. This came out June 29th, just this past week, a widely publicized sit-in, which was just insane. You talk about childish. I had some audio from Ron on that. Let's see. I can't find it now. I'll tell you what. We won't mess with that. But this thing was so childish, it's unbelievable. How the Democrats behaved in this regard. But now they're saying a bipartisan compromise proposal in the Senate. Widely publicized sit-in by House Democrats, a bipartisan compromise proposed in the Senate, neither is very likely to lead to any legislative action in Congress on gun safety this year. Oh, really? Well, that's not what I find out now, because now roll call is saying House plans vote on guns next week. Ryan tells members package would prevent suspected terrorists from buying guns. So, patriots, Constitution-believing Americans, people who care about the Second Amendment, conspiracy theorists, guess what? You're all suspected terrorists. Got a Ron Paul bumper sticker on your car there, baby? You're a suspected terrorist. The FBI says so. Got a copy of the Constitution somewhere on your person or in your possession? Never mind the fact that you can call Congress and order them and they will ship them to you. But guess what? You got a copy of it? You might be a terrorist. You're a suspected terrorist according to the FBI and their documents. No guns for you. This is how they're going to do it. Keep chipping away. chip, chip, chip until there's nothing left, folks. The House, roll call says, will vote on a counterterrorism package that will include a provision to prevent suspected terrorists from buying guns. Speaker Paul Ryan, scumbag, my words, not theirs, told Republicans on a conference call Thursday, according to a source on the call. The House, when it returns next week from its July 4th recess, hey, Independence Day, folks, let's celebrate freedom. Woohoo! Celebrate freedom, and then we'll come and take it away. How does that jive? As Americans are barbecuing and watching Chinese-made fireworks made by a communist Chinese government blow up over their heads, simulating war. Sorry to be a wet blanket, but that's the way. Isn't that what fireworks are? Hey, that's, you know, it's war. Woohoo! War, killing, yay! Look at the explosions. Unbelievable. The House, when it returns next week from its July 4th recess, will also vote on a mental health bill sponsored by Pennsylvania GOP Representative Tim Murphy, Ryan told his House colleagues. Republicans believe terrorism and mental illness have been the leading causes of most mass shootings. What about government psyops? Does that factor in? No, I guess not. Ryan's decision comes a week after Democrats, and maybe I'm mentally ill for suggesting that. They would probably say so, wouldn't they? Certainly some people would say so. No, folks, I'm just paying attention. Ryan's decision comes a week after Democrats disrupted House activities with a nearly 26-hour sit-in demanding action on gun control. Now, folks, if you were paying attention to this, by the way, this sit-in was very Orwellian. They were singing songs, civil rights era songs, on the floor of the House. This is a sit-in designed to take away your rights, designed to take away your freedom. Now, in the 1960s, blacks did things like this to gain their rights in the 50s and 60s. And today we have politicians who are trying to take away those rights doing this same thing. This is extremely Orwellian. Anyway, finishing this up, they say it's unclear whether Ryan's proposal would include the broad no-fly, no-buy proposal Democrats have supported for a more limited version endorsed by the National Rifle Association. And why, pray tell, is the National Rifle Association endorsing any gun control? Is my question. What the hell is wrong with the National Rifle Association? Anyway, Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi's office and Ryan may well offer the NRA-backed version, which puts the burden on the government to prove that someone on a terror watch list should have a gun. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to make a prediction here. If this legislation passes in Congress, you will see, or maybe you won't see it because it'll be kept secret, because we don't know who's on it now. As I said earlier in the broadcast, maybe I'm on it. Or maybe you're on it. Maybe we're all on it. Maybe anybody who posts anything about the government online is on it. But I'm going to tell you right now what's going to happen. If this bill passes, the terror watch list is going to explode. You have never seen anything like the number of people that are going to be denied the ability to buy a firearm because their name appears on a list. because all they will have to do is add your name to that watch list, and then you will be denied your Second Amendment rights. Because this is the thing, folks. In order for a new world order to take place, they have to get the guns. They can't do with you what they want to do without, while you have rights. Tech Dirt. No matter how you may feel about the Second Amendment or firearms themselves, there's no way you can feel comfortable with access to constitutional rights being predicated on something as worthless as the government's ever-expanding you-might-be-a-terrorist lists. But that's exactly what's being sought by legislators. In the wake of the Orlando shooting, politicians are searching for answers to unpredictable violent acts and have seized on the FBI's multiple investigations of the shooter as a, and I will say alleged shooter, as a potential terrorist for deciding who can or can't obtain a gun. A dramatic sit-in by congressional reps hoped to force the issue, even though it ended up pushing nothing forward at all. Yeah, well, not yet. Some legislators want gun ownership tied to terrorist watch lists, the same watch lists that have turned four-year-olds, listeners, into suspected terrorists and designed entire families, designated entire families, as suspicious simply because a single member somewhere in the branches of the family tree is under investigation. This knee-jerk reaction not only would eliminate rights, but also for any form of due process. As it stands now, there is very little chance anyone wrongly designated as a suspected terrorist by the U.S. government will be able to remove themselves from these lists. A recent court decision about the TSA's no-fly list has at least raised the redress procedure to extremely difficult from its previous status as non-existent. But that's only one of the government's terrorist watch lists. Another watch list contains thousands of Americans with no known ties to any terrorist group. And folks, they've used the IRS against you. You don't think they're going to use this against you? They continue to say the fact that these known unknowns comprise 40% of the watch list is only part of the problem. As we've seen from the FBI's never-ending series of terrorist investigations, the government is more than happy to create all the terrorists it needs to ensure a steady flow of income to certain agencies and a steady decline in rights for the rest of us. Even if the list used to deny gun purchases is limited to those deemed too dangerous to board an aircraft, but not dangerous enough to arrest, rights will be denied to thousands who've never done anything wrong. The no-fly list is a debacle, as anyone but the TSA and those pushing this legislation will admit. The no-fly list has in the past contained both people no one would normally consider unfit for gun ownership, as well as an 18-month-old toddler. Accurate, it is not, and yet legislators are more than willing to strip a right away from citizens based on an incredibly flawed database. Logic has no place in gun control arguments, though, as Representative John Lewis is one of the legislators leading the charge, even though he should know personally how worthless and inaccurate the no-fly list is. Apparently, he was on one, I guess. What's more disconcerting is the number of politicians who believe multiple rights should be stripped from those watch lists. Senator Joe Manchin, actually let these verbs tumble out of his mouth. Let these words tumble out of his mouth during an interview on MSNBC. Really, the firewall we have now is due process, he says. It's all due process. So we can all say we want the same thing, but how do we get there? If a person is on a terrorist watch list like a gentleman, the shooter in Orlando, he was twice interviewed by the FBI. We were briefed yesterday about what happened. But the young man was brought in twice. They did everything they could. The FBI did everything they were supposed to do. But there was no way to keep him on the NICS list or keep him off the gun buy list. There was no way to do that. He continues, he says, so we can't say that if a person under suspicion is under suspicion, there should be a 5-year period of time that we have to see good behavior if this person continues the same traits. Maybe we can come to that type of agreement, but due process is what's killing us right now. That's what he said, this Senator Joe Manchin. This is what the war is on, ladies and gentlemen. We're moving to an era in our nation where due process and all rights are under attack. All rights are under attack. Got to take the bottom of the hour break. We'll be back in a moment. This is Govern America. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. GovernAmerica.com. That's GovernAmerica.com. That's our website. And my email address is radio@governamerica.com. Also very active on Twitter. You can follow us at twitter.com/governamerica. And at the top of the hour, as we said earlier, I will be visiting with Linda Kurtz. If everything goes as planned, she is with the Michigan Smart Meter Education Network. Going to be giving us an update on what's been going on here, but also maybe around the country. A lot of the stuff that we're going to be talking about applies to the entire nation. And I think we're going to get into some strategies as well on how to protect yourself from smart meters. I know we talked about smart meters many times on the broadcast, what I call Agenda 21 enforcement meters, because ultimately this is going to be used to control your energy consumption, ladies and gentlemen. There's a lot being done in the name of climate change, and climate change is a reality in the sense that it does change. There's nothing you can do about it, and we're not causing it, however. Climate has always changed, always will change, so demonizing climate change is stupid. It's bad science. Actually, it's not science at all. It is a political agenda. It is a political agenda wrapped in science, disguised as science. It is not science. And there are plenty of meteorologists, there are plenty of climatologists who have come out defying the bullying and said that this is not a problem. And yet they continue to push it as a problem. We've been talking about this situation with the guns, and I didn't mean to spend 90 minutes on gun control again. But I did want to, one more thing I wanted to say regarding this terrorist watch list. We already have, in fact, the Denver Channel. This is, I think, the Denver Post. Now, actually, it's 7 News and the Denver Channel. It's a Scripps Howard, or Scripps TV thing. They put out an article saying marshals, innocent people placed on watch list to meet quota. So U.S. Marshals apparently are admitting that people have been placed on the terrorist watch list only to meet quotas. You could be on a secret government database or watch list for simply taking a picture of an airplane, it says. Some federal air marshals say they're reporting your actions to meet quota, listeners, even though some top officials deny it. The air marshals, whose identities are being concealed, told 7 News that they're required to submit at least one report a month, ladies and gentlemen. If they don't, there's no raise, no bonus, no awards, and no special assignments. Quote, innocent passengers are being entered into an international intelligence database as suspicious persons, acting in a suspicious manner on an aircraft, and they did nothing wrong, unquote. That was one federal air marshal being quoted by this local news outlet. Now, considering the congressional bill that we were talking about before the break, what's wrong with this scenario, ladies and gentlemen? People are going to be routinely denied the right to keep and bear arms based upon, and to purchase arms based upon this list that we're told now is swelling only because there is a quota. Air marshals are being required to add people to it. So, anyway, I'll get off of that. Moving along here, Brexit. I got some Brexit updates. I told you folks before, I think originally I bought into this whole Brexit thing. The night it was going on, I was really floored by the fact that it went in favor of the Brexit. The more I listen and examine what these people are doing, the more I become convinced that this is something the New World Order establishment wanted. For what reason, I'm not quite sure yet. But it's very apparent. In fact, last week on the show, we had a number of people call in, and different people commented about how quickly David Cameron resigned. Now we have Theresa May over there, who is their what they call home secretary, which is basically Homeland Security, only they call it home secretary. She's apparently gunning for the position. And this woman is a very scary woman. She's a very chilling woman. The measures that she's put forth to clamp down on that country is even more far. I mean, the Snooper's Charter, we talked about the Snooper's Charter in the past. If you're unfamiliar with that, you need to look that up. Point of the matter is, folks, the New World Order, European establishment isn't going anywhere. Now, just because, and even if the European, if they decide to kill the European Union, don't think that there won't be one. And this is the other aspect that we really haven't talked about. These countries can get together in some other form. Even if they split up the actual entity of the European Union, it can take any form they want it to take. So don't think that their little New World Order is at all damaged by this. And in the meantime, we have an American Union being established in the name of fighting climate change and other things. Obama's meeting and having a summit with the leaders of North America. This whole thing is reemerging all over again. The Independent out of the UK says David Cameron rules out possibility of second EU referendum. See, this is what a lot of people were pushing, were thinking, oh, they're going to have a do-over. And they've repeatedly shot that down. David Cameron is shooting it down. Theresa May said, oh, no, the will of the people have spoken. It's got to be done. In fact, she said, she went so far as to say, we got to make sure there's no way we're staying in the European Union, even through the back door. Now, you don't get more establishment than David Cameron and Theresa May, ladies and gentlemen. So it's obvious. Apparently, this is something they wanted. Now, if anybody has any ideas why, you can call me. 1-844-646-8376. That's toll-free. 1-844-6-GOVERN. 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-646-8376. Why would they want to stay in the European Union? David Cameron has ruled out a second referendum, they say, on Britain's EU membership. The Prime Minister's spokesperson said that holding another vote was not remotely on the cards. The clarification comes amid a petition calling for a rerun of the event of a close result and following in the event of a close result and following speculation that the government may go to the country again once the terms of Britain's new relationship have been agreed. So there you have it. Apparently they want it. Here we see from The Guardian. Theresa May launched Tory leadership with a pledge to unite the country. Home Secretary vows to make sure Britain leaves EU, saying there must be no attempts to remain through the back door. Why do they want this? Apparently they do. In the meantime, we see the United States of Europe, Germany, and France hatch a plan to create an EU superstate. Ladies and gentlemen, an EU superstate of which apparently CNN is all in favor of.
We'll bring in Christopher Hill, former U.S. ambassador to Iraq and South Korea. Chris, good to see you as always. I read your paper calling for possible reforms of the European Union. It was a fascinating read. And the part in it you write, you say the only way to make Europe more than the sum of member state diplomacies is to make it into a real state. Multi-level governance may be just about satisfactory for managing mountains of butter, but it is barely suitable for making decisions about guns. We know that the European...
Okay, did you hear that? Decisions about guns and multi-level guns. So in other words, hey, this European Union thing isn't working out so well, is it? Apparently things are not going quick enough. My question is this, ladies and gentlemen. Did they have the establishment? Did they decide to destroy this thing so that they can rebuild it the way they want? It's not working well enough. The nations that are a part of the European Union have too much sovereignty. They have too much control over their own affairs. We got to do something about that. So let's tear it down so that we can rebuild. We need a new European empire with a military. Here we see from the Express, EU wants an empire. Brussels hopes to expand its influence as far as Asia and Africa. The EU wants to expand its influence as far and wide as Asia and Africa, with critics fuming. It shows Brussels are planning to form its own empire. The latest EU foreign policy document, titled Global Strategy, calls for an extended reach into new spheres as distant as the Middle East and sub-Saharan Africa. It also outlined gradual synchronization and mutual adaptation between different member states, individual defense strategies. UKIP's defense spokesman, Mike Hukum, said, quote, "The EU wants its own empire, as former Commissioner President José Manuel Barroso made clear when he was in charge. This global strategy by the EU is yet another reason why last Thursday's result was a lucky escape for the UK." Well, getting back to the CNN report now.
The Union is a lot more than just an economic body, but also a body that determines the strength, the military strength, and the national security of so many alliances. Where does the European Union stand now in terms of what it can accomplish?
Well, I think, like a lot of things, it's going to be really very interesting. You know, for decades now, the European Union has talked about having a common security identity. And the issue has been, how can the European Union develop something that doesn't appear to be in conflict with NATO, because most of NATO is, of course, European countries. So Britain has kind of led the way in trying to square the circle to make sure the European Union can have some identity on security, but at the same time, its members can be continue to be strong members of NATO. So now we'll have a situation where the Brits are sort of out of this EU process and will probably want to remain a very strong entity within NATO. I mean, after all, Britain has one of the most capable armies in the world, probably the third or fourth most capable army in the world. So the Brits will really have a tough time here. And I think the whole European Union will have an especially tough time, because they have a lot of countries that really don't want to make the investments in capabilities that the Brits have often held their feet to the fire on. So it's going to be very difficult and very tough slog in the coming months and years.
And Britain might be consumed with chaos, internal chaos, for years as it negotiates with this EU exit. During this time period, Britain is less likely to deal with Europe's other security challenges. What are some of the other states around it that are going to suffer as a result?
Well, Britain, again, is an extremely capable army. So when they sit in the councils of the European Union, they talk about things that some of these small countries need to do, these countries with sort of niche capabilities. And then they, I think, have been very key in making sure the European Union doesn't go in a way, in a direction that weakens NATO. So now all that ends, and we have to see how this emerging, whether there's going to be a European Union, a security identity or not. Now, clearly, many European countries want to make sure that if Germany is going to grow its military, that it grows its military within the context of the European Union and not just as a giant German force, which, by the way, would worry a lot of Europeans. So the question, of course, is how is this going to come about? Will the French take a bigger role? You know, they have tried to do things with the Brits. Probably some of those things will continue. So I think there's a whole concern here, and especially it comes at a time when the Russians have been really resurgent in terms of military capabilities in places like Ukraine. So, I mean, we have a kind of a major tectonic shift here, and no one really knows how it's going to come out, except to say I think it's going to be rather chaotic in the months ahead.
All right. Chaotic is what the word so many people are using. Ambassador Christopher Hill, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Of course, we hope that a lot of people
Okay, I'm going to get out of that. He describes it as there's going to be chaos ahead, ladies and gentlemen. What is the mantra of the New World Order? Order out of chaos? Ordo ab chao? And here we go. So what are they doing? They're planning the chaos to bring about their order. And that's what this thing is about. I'm starting to think the whole reason for the whole Brexit situation is things aren't moving fast enough. Now we see from the Daily Mail, Juncker to force all remaining EU countries to adopt the euro after Brexit paves way for single monetary union. They say the eight EU members who do not currently use the euro may be forced to adopt it in a bid to speed up monetary union in the wake of Brexit. Well, gee, I thought Brexit was going to cause problems. I thought Brexit was going to slow down the New World Order. No. Obviously, it's speeding up, isn't it? The Daily Express reports that Denmark, Sweden, Bulgaria, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, and Romania will be given an ultimatum by the president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker. The German newspaper, Frankfurter, I'm not even going to begin to try to pronounce it, claimed that there were plans afoot to accelerate the completion of the monetary union. Brexit campaigners claim the plans show that the leave vote in last week's referendum proved a great escape for Britain. Earlier this week, Czech Foreign Minister Lubor Zaorálek, and I know I butchered his name, but I really don't care, he said the EU's chief bureaucrat was a negative symbol of the kind of federalism British voters rejected in the referendum and called for him to resign in the wake of the Brexit. Juncker is resisting pressure to go and is instead planning to speed up European integration, ladies and gentlemen. Britain's Lord Hill resigned as the European Commissioner for Financial Stability, Financial Services on Capital Markets Union after the Brexit vote and has been replaced by Latvia's Valdis Dombrovskis, whatever. Anyway, the point is, folks, this isn't slowing anything down. As a matter of fact, they're moving along quite rapidly. And despite what you call it, you can disassemble the European Union. How does all this stuff start? We were told there's going to be negotiations with the European Union. How was it established to begin with? Free trade agreements paved the way. The free movement of goods and services, including human resources, folks. You human resources out there. Yeah, you're able to move about freely across borders. The whole design of the regional system is to harmonize regulations, laws, rules, and ultimately monetary unions and militaries to make it very easy for the borders to be dropped. And we're seeing this in the Americas as well. This is why your country is being flooded with migrants from the South and from other places. But it all started with free trade agreements. Here we see from the Trenches World Report, and they're citing the Express out of the UK. Actually, I think this is an Express article. It is. Okay. EU army on the way. EU cannot rely on NATO and needs new defense policy, says Brussels chief. Now, last week I theorized, and it was a theory because I was pretty dumbfounded by this whole thing. But I said maybe there might be some competition going on here between the establishment, New World Order people. And I'm not entirely unconvinced that that isn't what's actually going on here. The European Union cannot rely on NATO to protect its member states from external threats and must develop a policy of collective defense that allows it to act autonomously if and when necessary. So here we're going to have another UN army, something that originally was forbidden in the original European Union Charter. According to a new foreign policy document from the Brussels-based institution to be handed to EU leaders next week, a credible European defense is also essential to preserve good relations with the U.S. EU foreign policy chief Federica Mogherini, the global strategy of this policy chief, the document states that as Europeans, we must take greater responsibility for our security. The white paper adds, while NATO exists to defend its members, most of which are European, from external attack, Europeans must be better equipped, trained, and organized to contribute decisively to such collective efforts, as well as to act autonomously if and when necessary. A more credible European defense is essential also for the sake of a healthy transatlantic partnership with the United States. So what we're seeing here, ladies and gentlemen, is the emergence of a super state, a powerful European Union, ever more powerful. Does it need Britain to be a part of it to do this? Ultimately, the goal is to swallow every nation anyway. So, this is going to be interesting to watch unfold. Anyway, moving along here, there's a number of reasons why you don't want to be a part of the European Union. Italy granted extraordinary 150 billion euro bank bailout program to prevent panic run on bank deposits. We see that from Zero Hedge. And then Soros, you know, again, his pond can't even freeze over before he's reemerging. New World Order statist Soros, speaking on the European Parliament, calls for multi-billions in EU surge funding. Yeah, surge, you know, the surge of migrants coming in there. He wants more funding for that. That's from the Economic Policy Journal. Here we see from Reuters, a little closer to home here, TransCanada formally seeks NAFTA damages in Keystone XL rejection. We've talked about these trade agreements, folks. Here you have another example of a company suing under these international regulatory schemes for losses. TransCanada Corporation is formally requesting arbitration over U.S. President Barack Obama's rejection of the Keystone XL pipeline, seeking $15 billion in damages, ladies and gentlemen, the company said in legal papers dated Friday. TransCanada submitted a notice for an arbitration claim in January and had then tried to negotiate with the U.S. government to reach an amicable settlement, the company said in files posted on the pipeline's website. Unfortunately, the parties were unable to settle the dispute. TransCanada said it then filed its formal arbitration request under the North American Free Trade Agreement provisions, seeking to recover what it says are costs and damages. We know already the government was sued over the country of origin meat labeling. How many other things have we been sued or are we going to be sued over? And this is the point, ladies and gentlemen. We need to get out of NAFTA. We need national sovereignty. We need the American people to stand up and defend. You know, forget barbecuing on July 4th. Forget celebrating independence. You're not independent as long as we're in NAFTA. You're not independent as long as you have the Trans-Pacific Partnership hanging over your head. You're not independent as long as you have the Trans-Atlantic Partnership Agreement hanging over your head with a European superstate which threatens to swallow the world, ladies and gentlemen. July 4th should be canceled until the people wake up and realize you're lost. You've lost your country. You've lost your country. And I do say lost. You've lost it. The question is, will you get it back? Will you take it back? Can it be taken back? I believe that it can. But time is running out. And the American people need to get passion behind them. And take notice. Quit with the drinking and partying and Facebooking and all the various distractions. It's time to wake up and smell the coffee and realize what you've lost. And change course to get it back. We're just about up to the top of the hour already. I wanted to get into the food thing. I ate up a lot of time talking about guns, but I don't regret it because I think it's very important. Nothing is more important than the Second Amendment, ladies and gentlemen. Now, when we get back, when we go into the, after we come back from the break, hopefully we'll have Linda Kurtz from the Smart Meter Education Fund on the broadcast with us. That's the plan. And when we come back, we'll talk with her. Get an update about some of the things that have been going on and maybe apply some of the information to you as well in your fight against tyranny and the invasion of your privacy and personal property. We'll be back in a moment. Hour number three of Govern America, straight ahead. All right, welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. This is hour number three, and I think we now have on the line Linda Kurtz. She is with the Smart Meter Education Fund here in Michigan. Linda, do you hear me?
I can, and I'm with the Smart Meter Education Network.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mispronounced that. Well, thank you for joining us, however belatedly. I don't know what's going on with the phone bridge. I guess if this continues to be a problem, we may end up having to do something a little different here. But you've been involved in this fight here in Michigan against these smart meters, and I just wanted to get a little background here from you. How did you come to take on this battle, I guess?
Well, I had never even heard of a smart meter, and I got an email from someone in, I think it was April, might have been May of 2012, and someone I didn't know well, and I read the email for some reason, and she said that a smart meter had been put on her apartment building, and ever since it had been, she had become extremely ill, and I thought, well, you know, there's a possibility that that could happen to me because I'd had a client the year before who told me he was EMF sensitive, that he couldn't use a computer anymore. He was a college student. He couldn't use a cell phone. He couldn't watch TV. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. And then a month later, I got a laptop computer, and I was really excited, like, oh, I can go outside and be on the Internet. And within half an hour of being on that thing, I was so sick. Nauseous, just felt absolutely horrible. And so I made the connection. And I called the computer store, and they said, well, you know, turn off the Wi-Fi. I did that. It helped a little bit. And I had to physically take out the wireless chip in that. So I knew there was a possibility. And about a week later, I walked into somebody's home in Ann Arbor where I live, home I'd never been to before, and I felt unbelievably ill. It was like being in a B movie and just having all these things hurtling at you.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, do you have a smart meter? And she said, I don't know. And I went outside and I looked, and there were three on the wall of the kitchen, which is the room that I was in. So at that point, I knew I was sensitive. I got a letter from DTE, our electric company, about, probably a week after that. And I made up a four-page flyer. I passed out over 200 of them in my neighborhood. And then about a week later, I saw a sign on the bulletin board at the People's Food Co-op that said, lock your meter. Don't let DTE install the smart meter. And I went and got a lock. And then somebody gave a talk, and I stood up and said, anybody who wants to organize against this, meet up with me afterwards. And so that's how the Smart Meter Education Network started.
Yeah, and you're in contact with people all over the state. How many people have kind of jumped on board, to your knowledge?
Well, I can't really say how many. I mean, we have around 2,000 people on our newsletter list.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So, and there's a lot of people who are, you know, keyed in through people who forward the newsletter or other groups, different political groups. And there's a lot of people who will call me, like, you know, 3 years after their area's been installed and said, you know, oh, you know, I've still got my analog meter and DTE is starting to hassle me. So there's an awful lot of people out there.
Yeah. Now, you're talking to people all across the country right now in different states, and the thing that I want to stress is that just because we may be talking about Michigan, a lot of the stuff that we're talking about applies to people in every state, because this is being rolled out. Actually, it's being rolled out, you know, internationally. I don't know if you are aware of that or not.
Yeah.
But this is a part of a much greater effort. In fact, I was just reading last night, strangely enough, that over in Britain, there is the British, there's a gas company, British Gas. They're actually, believe it or not, offering people now free electricity if they will take the smart meter. So it seems, and other people have criticized this whole thing as being a big scam, which it does seem, you know, nothing's ever really free. But it looks like there's desperation going on to get these things rolled out, because there seems to be, you know, with networks like yours and other people that are involved in the opposition to these things, it seems to be a real backlash. And the power companies, you know, and the whole smart grid apparatus seems to really pulling out all the stops to try to manipulate people into taking this. Has that been your experience?
They start off and nobody knows about them. And so they get a lot of them installed. And what seems to happen is that, you know, after about 4 years, more and more people start realizing what's going on, or they come to their neighborhood and suddenly they're ready to fight. You know, they weren't ready to jump on board until it was at their back door.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there is also some desperation on their part. I mean, the truth of the matter is most people don't care if a smart meter's on their home. Most people don't feel it, and therefore it's hard to imagine, when you can't feel something or you don't feel the effects of it, that it really is going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes difficult to make people, I mean, even close friends of mine, understand what's going on. Now, DTE, so the electric company on in the eastern part of Michigan, they don't call them smart meters. They have never used the word. They call them advanced meters. And you can be pretty sure that that happened, because in California, people, you know, again, didn't know about the smart meters, but people were getting meters put on their home and they were getting sick and they didn't understand why. And so the smart meters got a bad name. So by the time DTE was going to roll them out, they called them advanced meters. And so people get a letter in the mail that says, we're upgrading your electric meter, you know, it's going to be really great for you. And, you know, or they call it an AMI meter, but the word smart meter is never used. So that in itself creates confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is that last week, DTE sent a newsletter to all of its employees, doesn't matter what division they're in, doesn't matter what they're due, telling them how to talk to people about the smart meters. That speaks to me of desperation.
Yeah. Well, that's a big pat on your back. That's the closest thing to recognition of your efforts that you'll ever get from the other side. You mentioned health issues, And I want to come back to that for just a moment, because apparently a lot of people have felt this. And I don't want to just focus on the health things, because there's also privacy issues as well, which is a big deal. I mean, a really big deal that people really need to pay attention to. But I wonder, what all kinds of effects have people been feeling from these things?
There's a lot of different things people feel. Some of the most common ones are insomnia, ringing in the ears, heart palpitations, anxiety, irritability, outbursts of anger, increases in blood sugar levels, increases in blood pressure levels. Children often get nosebleeds. They become hyperactive. And they're getting slammed by Wi-Fi in the schools, too. So, you know, it's really becomes a problem for them. Other things that people experience are dizziness, balance problems. People will find that their jaw is extremely clenched. Some people, when they lie down in bed, they literally cannot get up in the morning. It's like they're paralyzed. And this would sound really crazy, but I've heard it, you know, from enough people that it's really something that's happening. And it may be because the bed springs are picking up the current and feeding it into their body. So people have, most people have more than one reaction. I mean, I've got multiple things going on. One of the things, one of the more down-the-road things that is happening to me is cataracts.
Wow.
And gingivitis. So the eyes and the testes are two of the two parts of the body that can get even more affected than other parts, or have more degradation happen to them because they're so filled with fluid. And the EMFs, one of the things the electromagnetic fields do is cause a lot of free radicals to form in the body. And those are the things that you want to take antioxidants for. Eat those, you know, colorful fruits and vegetables. And when you can't clear that out quickly enough, it just causes all kinds of problems in the body. Cataracts can be part of that. Floaters can be part of that. So gingivitis, another thing you'd never think would happen from those. And there's research papers, I mean, on this. I mean, it's not just, you know, my personal experience or that of other people. I mean, people have studied this kind of thing.
Yeah, and these are studies that we're not going to hear about, apparently, because there is, you know, a big problem, and everything seems to come back to money. Everything seems to come, you know, it's like the Bible says, the love of money is the root of all evil. Well, certainly, truer words couldn't be spoken, because we have everything in society really boils down to somebody's agenda being paid off, and somebody's profit-making scheme having to be furthered, and so the truth has to be suppressed. You know, and it doesn't matter about the public health. We've got all this Wi-Fi technology around today. People with cell phones, you know, many of these carriers operating on the microwave or near the microwave frequencies. You know, and so people are voluntarily radiating themselves every single day. And it's something that's almost impossible to be without. You know, even if you make the decision not to have a cell phone, you'd be hard-pressed to find a payphone. At one point, you know, if you needed to use a phone and you were away from home, you could find a payphone and do it. But you almost have to have a phone of some kind now, because there are no payphones anymore. Or if there are, they're in the neighborhood you wouldn't want to be. So,
well, or what I do is, if I have to make a call when I'm somewhere, I simply go in somewhere and say, can I use your phone? Or I ask somebody to, you know, occasionally make a call, but I can't even be near the cell phone. So, I mean, it's not even an option for me.
Right.
And that's one of the things that happens when you're hypersensitive to these electromagnetic fields. Now, they're going to affect everybody down the road.
Yeah.
But when you're hypersensitive to them, you become affected by more and more things. And it becomes very difficult to live. I can't even spend time outside of my own house anymore because I got a cell tower 1,000 feet away from me.
Yeah,
and that had already affected my sleep, although I didn't realize why I wasn't sleeping well. Then they put the smart meters in, and things went over the roof, and I just couldn't sleep anymore. My body's adjusted a bit so that I'm you know, sleeping a little better unless I spend 15, 20 minutes outside on my own property, and I can't sleep all night. And that's what happened to me yesterday. I didn't sleep all night last night.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's something, it's like, you know, it's like there's, your home is supposed to be your castle.
Mm-hmm.
And yet these frequencies are going through your home. The electric, you know, you have no control over your neighbors, Wi-Fi blasting into your home. The electric company wants to put a meter on your house that is going to bombard you not only with radio frequency, but the dirty electricity that goes through the home wiring. And, you know, according to them, you don't have an option.
Yeah. Well, and there seems to be a disconnect among the average person who doesn't suffer the effects, at least knowingly, the health effects of these meters and these newer technologies, these Wi-Fi radiation, a disconnect between, I mean, many people don't either turn, they either turn a blind eye to the fates of those who do. There's just not a recognition, or they just think it's all in their head, you know, because, well, I don't have a problem, so, you know, maybe you're just imagining all these things.
Right.
And that there's another problem, but then you go turn the corner. I guess what I was saying a moment ago, though, is that I think we've come to a point where, like you pointed out, it's almost impossible. Really, if you're going out in public, it is impossible to avoid this kind of radiation, the increases in this stuff, because it's everywhere. It's in every public place now, and in most private places. So the only thing you can just about do is try your best to eliminate exposure. And that even goes for people who have the devices. To try, you know, most people are sleeping with cell phones next to them, just a foot or two away, and the whole time they're sleeping, they're radiating themselves with RF. It's just really remarkable. I'm afraid we're headed for a public health catastrophe in the future. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing about the radio frequency, the wireless frequencies that the smart meters put out, the cell phones put out, and so on, is that they affect so many different systems in the body. Mm-hmm. So let me just take 1 minute to explain one part of that. So one of the things that happens is that when the radio frequencies or the frequencies from the dirty electricity hit your body, they knock calcium ions off your cell membrane. Those are charged particles. And when they do that, your body is flooded with calcium in places the calcium shouldn't be. One of the things that happens is calcium is a neurotransmitter. It helps the nerves to make their signals. So you can't sleep at night because your brain is flooded with calcium in the synaptic spaces, the spaces between the nerves. You're getting heart palpitations. Well, part of that can be because there's calcium firing in your heart, telling your heart to do this, to do that, and it's very erratic. The muscle cramping, the same kind of thing. The calcium being leached out of where it's supposed to be will enter the cell and cause all kinds of enzymatic reactions. And enzymes are what actually do so much of the work in our body. They make so many bodily processes happen. So it can start telling your body to do things when it's not supposed to. Oh, make this hormone, don't make this hormone. Oh, your blood sugar levels go up. Different things like that. So, you know, at first it would seem like, how could all these, when I first got into this, right,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything, and there was very little information on the Internet. And I was even skeptical and thought, well, how could, you know, all these different reactions that people are claiming, really? And then they started happening to me. But then I also started reading about why such a wide variety of health effects can be caused by the effect on one simple, you know, molecule, the calcium molecule.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that strikes me as rather ironic is, you know, we, back in the 80s when I grew up, we had, you know, I remember when microwaves first came on the scene and, you know, microwave ovens. And that was a military-style technology that was brought into the mainstream, like so many of these other things, including the Internet, by the way, you know, developed by the Internet and ultimately adapted for consumer use. And, you know, the microwave, you know, is something that had, you know, basically it's a Faraday cage. You can put your cell phone in the microwave. Don't turn the microwave on, of course, but call your cell phone. It's not supposed to ring because that thing is reinforced, you know, and that's what that screen is when you look through the front window of the microwave is a part of the old Faraday, you know, cage apparatus to keep the signals from going in or leaving, you know. And so that was reinforced in such a way to try to keep people from having radiation, microwave frequency, spilling out onto you and giving you cancer and stuff. Now we've turned around, and yeah, the microwaves are still reinforced, but we get all this other technology that's doing the very thing that the microwave oven Faraday cage was supposed to prevent. It's really remarkable.
Right. And you know, another thing that's interesting is that, for instance, Salzburg, Austria has limits for radio frequency radiation that are thousands of times lower than the United States. Mm-hmm. Russia has lower limits. China has lower limits. The European countries have lower limits than what we have here. France has banned Wi-Fi from their public schools because they are seeing the effects. And what the limits are in the United States is this was done to protect radar operators back in the 1960s because they were getting ill in it, and it became very obvious. If the radio frequency radiation emitted will heat up the tissue, okay, the flesh, mm-hmm. of a 6'2" tall man, 220 pounds, and it will heat it up in a half-hour period, then it's too high. If it heats it up 29, it's not too high. It was designed for a one-time exposure. They didn't look to see what about the biological effects of the stuff that I was already talking about. So the safety limits are not safety limits.
Right. Well, let's turn a corner here if we can and talk a little bit about what the privacy ramifications, you know, because we can get into, you know, we were talking earlier about the health ramifications, and we could talk about studies. You said earlier there were studies that were done. You know, and of course, every time any study is done on anything, it's being suppressed by the industry. And what it looks to me like is we're having a whole industry being built up around these technologies to the point where there's a profit motive involved that is designed to crush free, you know, any kind of exposure, any kind of objective study, anything that is designed to make this thing look bad so people won't adopt it. Can we address a little bit about the privacy ramifications of the smart meters and, you know, what that means for the average individual?
Yeah, there's a couple of things, and I'm not as well informed about that, but one of the things is that we've already had two former CIA directors say the smart grid will be used to spy on Americans. So I think that's enough to tell you that there's some privacy ramifications. The NSA has used smart meter data. In Ohio, one of the things that has happened with smart meters is that law enforcement has subpoenaed data from the electric company, and somebody's usage is very, very high. And they say, oh, these people must be growing marijuana illegally. And so one guy had a SWAT team in his door.
Wow.
No notice, SWAT team in his door, beat his door down. He had a lot of computers in his house.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, this feeling of a lack of safety, another part about it, and I think, you know, look, the electric companies are doing this for a variety of reasons. To make money, to satisfy the government with its mandates about, you know, which may be well-intentioned, but with its mandates about, you know, electrical usage, because one area of the country or a state is producing a lot of electricity, another doesn't have enough, they can shunt it around when they have a digital meter because they can, I don't know why, but they can tell better what's going on. But then the other reason is the profit motive.
Yeah.
So the chip manufacturers are making a ton of money off of this stuff. They want it to keep on going. But the electric companies are seeing the benefit of this data gathering. So a smart meter in Michigan right now gathers your data and sends it to the electric company in 15-minute increments. That doesn't mean that that's how often it's pulsing. It's pulsing constantly. But every 15 minutes worth of usage is transmitted. They can tell when you go to bed, when you get up, when you started using a lot of stuff, how many people are in the home.
Yeah.
If they want to program it for 1-minute intervals, they can do that. When they do that, they can get really fine-grained data on what you're doing. The National Institute of Standards and Technology, government agency, and the study was done some time back, looked at smart meters and said they are a real problem for privacy. And here's the kind of data they can gather. And the other thing that you have is that a smart meter not only has the transmitter that transmits to the utility, and that also the utility can transmit to your meter, shut you off, you know, do different things, make software changes. All right, got to gather my thoughts here a second.
That's okay.
It has a Zigbee transmitter in it. And a Zigbee is a device that communicates into the home with all of the smart appliances. The smart appliances.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Let me interrupt you. I'm sorry. We have the bottom of the hour break.
And then
we'll continue on the other side of the break. Okay, folks, we're visiting with Linda Kurtz of the Michigan Smart Meter Education Network. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America, final half hour of the show here today. And we're visiting with Linda Kurtz, who's with the Smart Meter Education Network. And you can get to her website, by the way, by going to www.smartmetereducationnetwork.com. That's smartmetereducationnetwork.com. As we were talking about smart meters and probably the smart grid as well, we were discussing some of the health ramifications associated with the smart meters, and we've kind of turned a corner and got into some of the privacy ramifications as well, as Linda has been doing her research regarding the studies involved, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, the statements they've made about the data that can be gathered. We know that the NSA has become a huge problem to our freedoms and our rights to privacy and what have you, the ability to be secure and, you know, in our persons, as the Fourth Amendment recognizes our right to do that. And so the point is, ladies and gentlemen, in a day and age where corporations and government is increasingly hostile to our freedoms and our privacy, do we want to have these things invading our homes? And that's the problem. And, you know, Linda, welcome back from the break. I don't know if you remember what you were saying just before we went into the break.
Yeah, I do, and I think
okay.
I have my thoughts gathered a little better now.
Very good.
And that was actually a good segue, what you just said. So the smart meter also has a Zigbee transmitter on it, and that communicates with the smart appliances in your home. So
mm-hmm.
if you buy new appliances, most of them are going to have a smart chip in them. It's a wireless chip. It's emitting all the time. It's another source of great damage to health. The other thing is that information can tell the electric company what kind of appliance you have, not just whether it's a toaster or a washing machine, when it's running, what cycle it's using, and what brand it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people say they don't care very much about the privacy issues. That's fine. You know, it's everybody's personal opinion on that. But here's the thing. That data is going to be sold.
Yep.
And when it's sold, it's going to be used for people to advertise to you. Now, your personal data isn't going to be sold. It's going to be aggregated data, a zip code, a neighborhood, a street, whatever it might be. One of the executives of CenterPoint Energy, I think it was, said recently on a video that you can find on the internet, he said the data is going to be worth more than the electricity that we sell. We got to find a way to mine that data.
Yeah.
So this is what they're looking at. They're looking at selling your data. Advertising influences people in ways that we do not even think about and do not even realize. So this is another method for control. Because if you think about government and corporations being in bed together, it kind of ends up being the same thing. Government, corporation, somebody's controlling you.
Yeah, you're singing our song. I'll tell you what, we've been moving as a society toward a totalitarian system where corporations are really empowered tremendously, and you're right. You can't really tell where government control ends and corporation. Basically, they're all in bed together, and this is a big problem. You know, we're seeing this smart meter thing emerge, and there's really a whole smart grid system. And you know, we talk a lot about on this broadcast about how basically everything seems to be boiling down to automating society. Basically, designing systems that are such that everything can be fully automated and be brought down to maximum efficiency so that it can be managed from the top down. And we're seeing this with the emergence of robotics and everything, and I know I'm kind of deviating a little bit, but it's all really interconnected in a big way. So this privacy issue is a big issue, and it even to me it's a big issue even outside of the smart meter system, because I've had Patrick Wood on of the he used to be of the August Forecast. He has a website called technocracy.news where he writes and posts articles about these emergence of this technocratic system whereby everything, it basically, we're becoming slaves to machines and to electronic technology. And what I asked him at one point, what about this? Why can't we just fight this battle with the smart meters on the issue of the health issue alone? Because there's enough people that are being affected by this. He says, well, it's a real issue, but the problem is that their answer might end up being, okay, we won't put a smart meter on your house. We'll just collect all the data via an Ethernet cable. And I thought, oh, okay, so there's other ways to be in. So we have to incorporate the privacy thing. But what does it take to make people actually get it, number one, and then if they get it, to make them care, if they can understand it, to make them actually concerned enough to actually act on that concern?
Yeah. Well, that's something that I hope, you know, everybody listening to this broadcast is asking themselves, because it is so easy to get overwhelmed by so many things. But, you know, smart meters, I mean, who ever cared about the meter on the side of your home? Who ever thought about the meter on the side of your home? And yet, as we're seeing, as you're saying, you know, we got the health, we got the privacy, we got control. I mean, you're looking at everything. And if they cut your power off, it's pretty difficult to live in this society without power anymore.
Yeah.
So in terms of things that people can do, in Michigan, we do have a bill in the State House. It's the Analog Meter Choice Bill, House Bill 4916. And it is languishing right now because the chair of the Energy Committee isn't interested in it. He's going to become an energy lobbyist when he gets out. But people writing to their state legislators, telling them that they care about this bill. Because the legislators do listen, and we are finding more of them coming on board and being willing to support this bill as they get educated and as they understand that it's a question of choice. So, yeah. You don't care about the health issues. You're not concerned about the privacy issues. But you feel like people ought to have a choice. Mm-hmm. And If I have an analog meter on my home, the old style of meter that I do still have on my home, that's no DTE is still getting its electric reading. So what's the difference? There is no difference. They say, well, we'll put on a smart meter with the radio transmitter disabled. You know, you're going to be fine. Well, you're not, because the health problems are still the same. They can still collect all the data, which is why they want to put it on.
And this is what they call the opt-out meter, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a complete misnomer.
What's the difference between a so-called opt-out meter versus the regular smart meter? You said that they say that it's just supposedly the one has the transmitter
turned off. Right. So the smart meter comes with the radio transmitter and the Zigbee. And what you are supposed to get if you get their opt-out meter is a smart meter with those two functions disabled. However, we know for a fact that they're not always turning them off. We've had electrical engineers out measuring them transmitting. And I don't know that they're doing it deliberately. I think sometimes they just don't do what they're supposed to do. So that's the difference between the two. And then the opt-out meter, the difference between the opt-out meter and the analog meter is, well, and this holds for the smart meter too, is the dirty electricity. So what you have, when you've got a computer as a meter, you have to step the voltage coming in from the power line down, and you have to step it back up to run everything in your home. And the process of doing that creates dirty electricity, which is this very spiky field. It's pulsing in millisecond bursts. It runs through your wiring of your home. It's above you. It's below you. It's all around you. It's radiating out into the room, and it is hitting your cells in millisecond bursts. So people who have an opt-out meter on their home are getting just as sick as people with the regular smart meter.
Hmm.
No problem for the electric company to leave the meter on. It's cheaper for them. They refuse to do it. And that in and of itself tells you there's a larger agenda going on, in my opinion.
Yeah. Now, and there's another issue involved here, too, and that is not only, you know, assuming we could trust the power companies, the corporations that are involved there, and everything, you know, in the government. How is this data being transmitted? Do you know if it's encrypted when it goes through? And if so, how strong of an encryption is it? And what are the chances of hacking? Because we know that, you know, in our society, even former Homeland Security Secretary has warned, you know, in fact, Ted Koppel, we've talked about this before many times on the broadcast, about how Ted Koppel has a new book out called Lights Out, where he's talking about how the power grid could be, you know, hacked and brought down. And he says it's not a matter of if, but when. An outgoing Homeland Security Secretary, Janet Napolitano, made a warning, too, in that regard, that the nation's power grid could be vulnerable to hacking and that sort of thing. These are real issues. I mean, so could it be that these could possibly be maybe an entry point for some rogue state or rogue group or individual that might want to cause damage?
From what I understand, yes, it could be. Again, I don't know a lot about this part because it gets pretty technical, but the bandwidth that they use is unregulated,
mm-hmm.
and apparently they're using it because they don't have to pay anything for it. But it also means that anybody else can be hopping onto it. The grid was hacked in Puerto Rico a few years ago. It was hacked in the Ukraine either early this year or late last year. And I think that brought out some of those people making those comments that you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and there's bills here and there in different legislatures, you know, about encryption and privacy and so on and so forth. I don't know that any of them have ever been passed. But, yeah, it's definitely vulnerable.
Yeah, and you talk about other environmental hazards. Do you know anything about, you know, the effects of these things possibly on bee populations or, animals. I mean, certainly if it was affecting human health, it would be affecting, the health of a lot of different, especially when you're talking blanketing whole neighborhoods and large chunks of land with this electromagnetic frequency.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. One is, you know, they're noticing how the frog populations are declining, and they're declining in places that are far away from any chemicals. And my suspicion is it does have to do with all the radio frequency in the air. At my own house, when the cell phone tower went up, unbeknownst to me because it was hidden by trees, all of a sudden the insect population went down. And, you know, I'd been living here for a few years, and I'm like, where are all the dragonflies? You know, where are all the bugs? Well, more than 10 years later, the smart meters came in, and it was just a complete and total crash. I mean, you do not see any bees. Used to not walk through my yard barefoot. Big deal if I do now. Almost no butterflies. Almost no dragonflies. Fireflies seem to be doing okay. Spiders seem to be doing okay. But many insects navigate via magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put out these frequencies, these are electromagnetic frequencies, they mess it up. They have done studies on bees and cell phone frequencies disrupting their ability to navigate. And I think we're seeing it, and people just aren't noticing it.
Yeah. Well, and then you have the other issue that many of these things have caused fires and explosions. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, definitely. DTE claims that there have been no no fires, no explosions from their smart meters. A woman in Ann Arbor actually called us up shortly after the meters were installed here and said, you know, my meter exploded. She was on the TV news. There have been some other houses in the Detroit area that have burned up from the smart meters. They hush a lot of this stuff up.
Sure.
Interestingly, when I went to look for those TV and, online newspaper stories from 2012, 2013, they were all gone. They disappeared. They took them off. DTE got to somebody. Now, DTE put out its own bulletin saying that, in fact, meters have exploded and telling its meter readers to look out for them. And yet it tells the state legislature that there have been no fires. And what you have in Saskatchewan province in Canada is a lot of fires to the point where the state decided to remove all of the smart meters. Now they're putting new ones back in, but they got rid of those ones. Portland, Oregon, same thing. In Nevada, there were a series of fires. At least one woman was killed. And one of the electric utility employees, see, my brain, sometimes these cell phone frequencies go through my house and then I begin to have some difficulty thinking, and that's what's happening right now.
That's okay.
So I apologize for that.
That's okay.
One of the utility company employees went to the newspapers, turned a whistleblower, and said, here's what happens. We know there's a fire because the meter, you know, isn't transmitting anymore. We get out there before the fire department. We take the meter off. We put a new one on. We spray paint the wall, and we leave, and nobody ever thinks about it.
Wow. That's incredible. You know, I remember back when they first came out with the smart meters, because, you know, we've been focusing primarily on electricity, but they were, we're talking about also water meters and gas meters as well. And, what everything you're saying here regarding electromagnetic radiation and privacy, for one, you might as well multiply that by three for most homes. You know, now out here where I'm at, we don't have, thankfully, meters on our well and that sort of thing yet. There have been parts of the country where they've tried to meter wells and actually have done so. But we have a propane tank here. But most homes are going to have three of these things,
yeah.
Or two at least.
Or four if they have the interruptible air conditioning.
The interruptible air conditioning?
Yeah, so you get a separate meter so that if they want to, they can turn off your air conditioning, like people voluntarily do that. Like one of my neighbors has two electric meters.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize that took two meters.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, they used to do it with the analog. I mean, I don't know how they did it, but they did it. But now they've decided they got to have a smart meter for that, too.
Wow.
Yeah, they're getting radiated with all this stuff. And people, we've had some people call who've only had the gas meter put on because they don't put them on at the same time and have been having terrible problems. The water meter's the same thing. One guy in Inkster told us, you know, my blood pressure and my blood sugar went through the roof. He said, you know, it's always been really well regulated. And I go to my doctor and he says, oh my gosh, you know, this is really out of whack. You know, what's going on? Like, nothing's changed. And then we came to give a talk on the smart meters, and he said, or no, he got our flyer, and he brought it to his doctor, and he said, could this be what's happening? And it was right when the meter got put on that these problems began happening. And that's what you see over and over again. You know, people will call me, you know, that have been living with terrible health problems for 3 years, and they call up just, you know, in tears or outraged and say, you know what, I have been suffering, I have been to the ER, I had no idea what was wrong with me, I found out about the smart meters, all my symptoms match up, I call the electric company, I find out when the meter was put on, it's exactly when these problems started happening.
Wow. Well, let's talk a little bit about the strategies, what we should be focused on doing, because I can tell you right now, I know of a particular guy who is a listener who's in Missouri. He's a blind man. He's living in an apartment, you know, basically a condo, and he doesn't have control over his meter. Basically, the complex that owns the building does. And so, and he's asked me a number of times whenever we've talked about this on the show, you know, he says, can you get some of the guests that you have on to address the, you know, what somebody like me maybe could do to shield this radiation out? Because he says, I know it's coming. Right now, I guess they have the analog meters. He says, I know they're going to be rolling these things out here in the apartment as well. And he says, there's really not a whole lot I can do to stop it, other than maybe to try to convince them. But the management, I guess, that he would be talking to, they're just employees. They don't really have any real power other than to, you know, enforce whatever policies that the higher-ups say. So really you're dealing with, again, in his case, a faceless, you know, bureaucracy. So he's left with the need to be able to try to figure out a way on a personal level to try to mitigate some of the risks involved. Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, there's a couple things. And, you know, the apartment complex probably doesn't have any power anyway because, you know, just like here, I mean, I know in Missouri they're just forcing them down people's throats there, too.
Right.
There is a woman, though. There is a group in Missouri. But I don't know the name of it. It's probably Missouri, you know, Missouri Against Smart Meters or something. So he might try and find that out. But yeah, so in terms of trying to mitigate or remediate, you know, one problem you have in an apartment complex is, you know, everybody's probably got Wi-Fi, so you've got that going through. There's a couple of things. Okay. So one thing that you can do to block the radio frequency if your utility will not let you opt out, okay? So at least, you know, if you have a digital meter, at least you can opt out, hopefully, depending on where you are, and get that radio frequency turned off, and I recommend that everybody do that. You can buy or make a smart meter guard, which is basically stainless steel or aluminum mesh. I mean, you could make it with window screen, and it will block, you know, a fair bit of the radio frequency. On the inside of your house or your apartment, the wall where the meter is, you would want to put either some aluminum screening, or even better, you can put that UV window film, the reflective UV window film, and you would just stick it to the wall, and it will, anything that's coming in, it will reflect it off so that it goes back outside. You can put that on your windows. If you have aluminum siding on your home, you're much better off. I do have aluminum siding and aluminum window screen, so the readings in my home are much lower than outside, but they're still not so good. Now, as far as the dirty electricity goes, you can put a filter on the meter. It would attach to the circuit breakers, and you will filter out the dirty electricity. This is actually something that I've just gotten into selling after doing some investigation, obviously, for my own reasons. And they do work, and people do find relief from their symptoms. If you're in an apartment building, it would still be a good thing to do, but it's not going to work as well there or a condo because the adjoining walls, you know, of your other neighbors are still going to be carrying that dirty electricity. Any amount that you can tamp it down is going to help, though.
Yeah. Very good. Aside from the legislative aspects, so we talked about the Michigan Analog Choice Bill, and you said that was HB 4916?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we have information on our website under opt-out legislation. And we also, you know, our website covers a lot of stuff, and we do have stuff about other states. So if people look through, you know, it's not going to be as comprehensive, but they will find some information about opt-outs in other states.
Okay, sounds very good. So here's a solution, ladies and gentlemen, as everybody's always saying, oh, you complain about the problem, we need solutions. You got to focus, again, on your state legislature and your cities, because this is where the battles are being largely fought. And you can certainly do something about the smart meter rollout on a state level. So this is what I encourage people to do. Look at the model legislation on the Smart Meter Education Network's website. SmartMeterEducationNetwork.com is the website. SmartMeterEducationNetwork.com. And if you live in Michigan, as I do, HB 4916, Michigan Analog Choice Bill. And I encourage people in other states to look up the bill as well and take that to your state legislator and say, hey, we need to do something like that here because this is a very important issue. Linda, we're just about out of the hour already. It's been a very fast hour. I appreciate you coming on with us.
Yeah, well, thank you. And can I just mention, we do have a newsletter. People in Michigan, please do go to our website. Please sign up because this is going to be a tough battle. We can win. And everyone everywhere, start educating people. You know, get some facts and start educating because the more people hear it, the more they will begin to listen.
All right. Hey, thank you very much. We'll have to do it again. God bless. All right, folks, that's SmartMeterEducationNetwork.com. That's SmartMeterEducationNetwork.com. And pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. And join us back here next week, folks. God bless. We'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.